God ran away when we imprisoned her and put her in a box named church. God would have none of our labels and our limitations. And she said, I will escape and plant myself in simpler soil where those who see will see and those who hear will hear. I will become God, believable, because I am free and go where I will. My goodness will be found in my freedom, and that freedom I offer to all, regardless of color, sex, or status, regardless of power or money. I am God, because I am free, and all those who would be free will find me roaming, wandering, singing. Come, walk with me. Come, dance with me. I created you to sing, to dance, to love. If you cannot sing nor dance nor love because they put you also in a box, know that your God broke free and ran away. So send your spirit then to dance with her. Dance, sing with God whom they cannot tame nor chain. Dance within, though they chain your very guts to the great stone walls. Dance, beloved. Ah, dance.
Criminals were also led out with him for execution. And when they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him with the criminals, one on either side of him. But Jesus himself said,
Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Then they divided his clothes by casting lots. And the people stood and stared while their rulers continued to scoff, saying, He saved other people. Let's see him save himself, if he is really God's Christ, his chosen. The soldiers also mocked him by coming up and presenting sour wine to him, saying, If you are the king of the Jews, why not save yourself? For there was a placard over his head which read, This is the King of the Jews.
Look at all these people here to see us. Are you not the Messiah? We were told we were being crucified with the Messiah. And there would probably be a good crowd here. It looks like you're in the same crap hole as us. But you can save yourself. And us, right? I mean, look at all these people here. You would really impress them. Why can't you save yourself? Well, and us too. But aren't you the Christ? The great Jesus Christ. Prove to us you're no fool. Walk out there. Get down off there and walk across my swimming pool.
Shut up. Aren't you afraid of God even when you've been condemned? And we're getting the same punishment as he is getting. It's fair enough for us, for we're only getting what we deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong. Now shut up. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom.
True. truly, I tell you truly, this very day you will be with me in paradise.
So I know last week may have felt like the culmination of our series when Vance put on his 80s wig and belted out the lyrics of "It's the End of the World as We Know It." That kind of seemed like the pinnacle. But this morning we're actually going to conclude with a story that seems the most fitting for what we've been talking about all month. A story that tells of the darkest moment in our Christian narrative, and yet one in which we may find a reservoir of hope. As we close out the series, we also close out the liturgical calendar, which is not something that we always follow here, but we think the calendar ends on December 31st, and the new year begins on January 1st. But liturgically, the calendar ends now, and the new year begins with the first Sunday of Advent. And the closing Sunday of the Christian year is known as Christ the King Sunday. It's a Sunday in which churches around the globe recognize Jesus' kingship, a kingship whose nature was unexpected and unlike any other. It was a humble kingship, driven by radical love, liberating love. Now, some of us struggle with the language of kingship and the hierarchical weight that this term carries, but that is the result of the baggage of our earthly history. When we look to the life of Jesus as an example of a king, we discover an entirely new meaning for the term. The story of Jesus' crucifixion exemplifies that truth in a most profound manner, revealing the congruency of his character and his gospel message of love. Three times in our scripture this morning, Jesus is tempted, challenged, called out to prove his kingship, to prove who he is and whose he is. He's challenged to save himself from execution and prove that he is the Son of God, the one they call Messiah. "If you are such a man," they say, "if you really are the King of the Jews, save yourself from this horrible death." Even one of the criminals beside him, on a cross of his own, challenges him to do so. "Save yourself," he says, "and us. If you are who they say you are, if you really are divine, if you have such power, then free yourself from this final verdict upon your life. Stop your story, stop your world from ending in this way. Oh, and save us too, please." Although I don't know that he said please. It's not the first time that Jesus has been tempted and challenged to prove who he is. Right on the heels of his baptism, Jesus was whisked away to the desert for 40 days by the Spirit. And while there, he fasted and he prayed, and we're told that he was tempted three times. To make bread from stones and feed his hunger, to jump from a high place and trust the angels of God to save him, and to worship the Satan in exchange for power over all the kingdoms of the earth. With each temptation was the challenge to prove who he was, to use his position, his power, his divinity to ease his discomfort, to save himself, to enjoy the prosperity of the world, and to rule as overlord of all. Those 40 days served as a liminal space between Jesus' baptism and his ministry. That time solidified who he was and who he was not. He was not a king who took action to save himself or to ensure his rule and position of authority. He was a king who took action to save the poor and the sick and the lost and the cast out and the vulnerable. He was a king who sought not order and law and obedience, but to liberate people and to draw them into a community of radical love and compassion for one another. The temptation and the challenge to prove himself were presented those 40 days in the desert, just as they were that day on the cross. But Jesus would not cower. He would not change who he was. When Jesus told the disciples of his impending death, Peter wouldn't hear of it. He tried to speak it into non-existence. But Jesus shared with him that to save his life in this world would be to lose his own soul, just as it would theirs. To save himself would contradict the very person he was. And so the day on the cross came, and the voices called for him to prove himself, voices that spewed hatred and violence. In all his days, he had acted with love. He had preached forgiveness. He had embodied a different way, a different kingdom that was a kingdom. But on that cross, those voices didn't care what he stood for. They hadn't been transformed by his teaching. They hadn't opened their hearts to his love. And so instead, they called for his death. For those disciples who watched, and not just the 12, but all of them, the men and the women who came to follow him, who had placed their faith in him, it must have felt like the end of the world as they knew it. Even with his words of foreshadowing that this is how things would play out, their one true comfort in the world was there on the cross, breathing his final breath. For many, it must have felt like the end of the world that they had been creating together with Jesus, a world of love and peace and justice. And I wonder, did he feel some of that too? Did he feel his beloved friend's pain as their world crashed in upon them? The darkness of that moment, the pain and the suffering, the injustice of it, none of that or anything else shifted Jesus in his foundation of who he was, of who he is. Even as death was upon him, he was whispering forgiveness to the crowd of executioners who hadn't yet understood their need for mercy. As his breaths became more painful and fewer, he promised paradise to the criminal condemned beside him. As he died at the hands of injustice and violence in our world, he did not save himself, but was a testament to the radical love of God. God incarnate, God embodied in human flesh, did not save himself from the sufferings and evils of the world as he could have, but joined us in our suffering from the injustices of the world. When it feels as though the world is ending as we know it, God does not distance God's self from the pain and the sorrow, but is right there with us in the midst of it. In reflecting upon the story of Jesus' crucifixion, Debbie Thomas writes, "What strikes me most is what I don't see. I see no path to glory that sidesteps humility, surrender, and sacrificial love. I see no permission to secure my prosperity at the expense of another's suffering. I see no tolerance for the belief that holy ends justify debased means. I see no evidence that truth-telling is optional. I see no kingdom that favors the contemptuous over the broken-hearted. And I see no church that thrives when it aligns itself with brute power. Where does this leave us? I think it leaves us with a king who makes us profoundly uncomfortable. Jesus makes me uncomfortable a lot. As much as I like the guy, he makes me uncomfortable a lot. He makes me uncomfortable because he challenges the way I live. He challenges my presuppositions about folks. He challenges my worldview. He challenges me to be more like him. And that is not easy. When faced with death, Jesus doesn't take the out and save himself. He doesn't sacrifice who he is and what he stands for in order to save his hide. Instead, he sacrifices himself to remain true to who he is and what he stands for. The truth is, as much as the crowd calls for him to prove who he is by saving himself, he actually proves himself by not saving himself. He proves who he truly is. It's just, they didn't know what they were looking for. They weren't looking for a king of his nature. They didn't know it was possible. It feels fitting to sit with this familiar story, to really sit with it as we close this series. Because when it does feel like the end of the world as we know it, we too might be challenged to prove who we are. We might be tempted to be something other than we are, to become someone that others think that we are, or that others expect us to be in order to survive in this world. We might be tempted to relinquish, to save our own hide, and to escape the darkness that is closing in. This month, we've been exploring how to live with faith and hope when the world feels so dark and final. There is hope in this story. In this darkest of stories of our faith narrative, the hope is Jesus himself, who chooses to help others when he could have helped himself, who looks systemic evil in the eyes of its beholders and offers forgiveness, who offers life to his neighbor that the world has condemned. Our hope is restored and we garner new faith when we remember the story of how Jesus was faithful to who he was and faithful to God, even in the darkest moment of the cross. The voices of power may challenge us and call for us to prove who we are. They may tempt us to relinquish and use what power we have, what means we have, to even stand on the oppression and suffering of others, so as to put ourselves forward and to make our way through the darkness of this world. It's a temptation that people of faith have faced throughout history. And in our time, as in others, even the church has relinquished, has caved to such temptations, and have sacrificed the heart of the gospel for their own power and life in this world. But Jesus offers us another way. He offers us another answer to the voices that demand we prove ourselves, that tempt us to respond. His way is one of love and forgiveness, of liberation and justice, of peace and healing, of grace and mercy, one of deepest conviction, and all in the face of that which contradicts it and tries to squash it. We'll still end up proving ourselves. We'll just prove who we really are. We'll give evidence for what is at the root of our existence. We'll end up proving that our hearts beat in rhythm with that of our Creator and the one who showed us the way. Remaining faithful and being hope embodied as he was nailed to a cross. And when we live in such a way, when we follow so closely to the one in whom we place our faith, we'll find that we do feel fine. Even though the world may be ending as we know it, we do feel fine. We will feel fine. Because our hope is not in this kingdom the world has built. Our hope is in a kingdom that Jesus invites us to help build right here and now. A kingdom not built on the darkness of the world, but the light within. When the voices call us to prove ourselves, may we keep remembering who we are and whose we are and who we have chosen to follow. Amen. Okay. Let me just say thank you to the folks that have been running the PowerPoint this month, because they have had a challenge with this series and have done a beautiful job with the imagery. If you don't know who those folks are, that's Connie May and Dominic and Mike Elmer, who is back with the kids right now, and Kelly, who's not here this morning. And Carolyn runs it for us, yeah. So they've done a lot of work. And I don't know if you caught this, I should say this, but all the artwork that was during the kids' song was Rob Hatem artwork, too. you can do the voices and the drawings of them all. It's amazing. That thankful tree apparently sprouted some new leaves, so help us get those leaves off there in the back and be ready, you know, fully for winter season. Thank you for all your contributions and building up the reserve fund. We appreciate it. Today, after worship, stay with us downstairs for soup lunch. We'll make crafts and decorate for Advent. We need your help. Aaron will also be staying with us, so you'll get to speak with him some more and get to know him. And then check in your bulletin. All the Advent goings-ons are in there. There's lots coming out. We've got a new event this year called Advent in Action that will pair carols, singing carols together, yummy cocoa, and actually putting into place, doing some actions that, you know, correspond with faith, hope, peace, joy, and love. So we hope that you can join us for that. Of course, we have the annual Christmas party and the youth Christmas party. It's that time of year. So take your bulletin home and add those things to your calendar. We'd love for you to be a part of all those things. Choir is also practicing today. If you want to be in the choir and you haven't joined, I think you can still come and sing to prepare for Advent Sundays coming up, and they will rehearse back in the community room. I told the band earlier that I was sad. This is the last week we're going to sing this. We have to sing Christmas carols and Advent carols next week. So enjoy our final Sunday of REM. We have to sing Christmas carols. I really do love Christmas carols, but I really have enjoyed REM. Why don't we stand for our benediction, and we will sing together one more time about how fine we feel as we go out.